Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A Scottish football podcast that isn't obsessed with just two teams, niche nonsense, or surprisingly brilliant. You decide. The Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. The cult Scottish football podcast now adapted into a hit TV show. Search the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast on your chosen podcast player now.
Very special edition of the Spurs show this week. As you know, this Sunday, it's the North Stroke South London Derby against the Woolwich Wanderers. And it's been a while since we kind of managed to sort of just focus on this game and talk about the rivalry, the hatred, the history. We have to admit that we are recording this show before the Bournemouth result. So if we got spanked tonight and we haven't mentioned it, you know why, so don't hold that against us. We've no idea what the result is, although you, listening wherever you're around the world, will know what happened last night. Joining me tonight is my co-host, Theo Delaney. How are you, Theo?
I'm very well, all things considered. Good to see you, Mike.
And you indeed. And two gentlemen who probably, certainly in the last, I don't know, 10 years, probably both the most prolific writers on our beloved club. So many books, I can't even mention them all now, but I'm sure, unless you're some kind of idiot, you've all at least got one of them at home. Martin Cloak returns. How are you, Martin?
I'm feeling extremely old after that introduction, but I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good.
I'm just parking also, my wheelchair somewhere and then checking my pension book cover at the moment.
It's quite all right. Yeah. It's quite all right. And also joining us, man who's written lots of stuff with Martin and by himself. He's gone solo. He did his difficult second album recently. Adam Powell is with us. How are you, Adam?
Good afternoon. Hello, Mike. Hello, everyone. Yeah, just on that, we're like kind of like take that. We keep reforming and then sort of going off and doing other things as well. But yeah.
Yeah, doing the lucrative reforming gig.
which one's Gary Barlow, though? That's the thing.
Yeah, no names, no pack drill.
Yeah. Well, as I said at the top there, we're recording this show on Thursday, so we don't know what's happening tonight, so there's no point mentioning it. But Sunday is obviously the big one against the Arsenal. In recent years at home in the league anyway, I don't think we've lost them in the league. I don't know if this is the kiss of death immediately, but we haven't lost since March 2014. But I want to kind of look back at why we hate them so much, because in recent years, especially with the sort of start of the Premier League, the Chelsea thing, the West Ham thing, even you could argue in the last few years, the Liverpool thing, but it is the kind of longest hatred for Spurs fans, and good reason. Martin, do you want to sort of give maybe our younger listeners a bit of a sort of background, quick potted history on, you know, why the rivalry is probably, I think, the strongest local derby rivalry, definitely in England. You could argue Glasgow Celtic Rangers, it's probably more vociferous, but certainly in England, as far as I'm concerned, it is the biggest rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on to hatred and whether that's exactly right later on. I mean, I grew up in North London in Haringey, so you read a Tottenham or Arsenal there, so there's a lot of the local stuff. But the rivalry between the clubs goes back to at the early years of the 1900s. And Arsenal, who were originally Dial Square, then Royal Arsenal, then Woolwich Arsenal, then the Arsenal, before they became Arsenal, were of course from Woolwich in South East London. But they moved to North London in 1913 when there's a guy who was a very ambitious estate agent called Henry Norris, quite a moneyed guy, who was a director at Fulham. He'd been trying to merge Fulham with Arsenal. But he saw an opportunity to move Woolwich Arsenal, who he saw were a club that had great potential, up to somewhere with better transport links. And so he identified a site in North London, which was the sports ground of St. John's College of Divinity, which had excellent transport links. But the problem with it was in Highbury, which was literally just down the road from Tottenham. And Spurs and Clapton Orient, now Leyton Orient, objected to the move. Local residents objected to the move, but Highbury opened for business in September 1913. So it was a kind of rivalry that was transported in. And then, of course, after that came a controversial incident where...
Yeah, just 6 years later.
Arsenal were, in 1919, where Arsenal were effectively awarded Tottenham's place in the top flight. But I don't know if, Adam, you want to take up the story at that juncture.
Yeah, Adam, I mean, what's interesting, what he said, basically, you could argue Arsenal are the MK Dons of North London, really.
Yeah, there's a good case to be made for that, the original franchise FC. And it's interesting, if you look back at the records at that time, there was a great sense of these are outsiders moving in. They don't represent the area. We're the team in the area. It's all being done for commercial reasons. There's no sense of identity in history, and they're a South London team, et cetera, et cetera. So all those kind of arguments... They're nothing new, you know. They go back to that era as well. But as Martin was saying, like the what I think really, really sparked the rivalry and the intensity of it was that decision that was made by the powers that be to award Arsenal a place in the first division at Tottenham's expense through.
Because they were sixth in the league in Division Two. We were second. I believe Chelsea stayed up, who should have been relegated. I mean, I mean, you could make a movie out of it. It's absolutely scandalous.
It was backroom deals, basically. I mean, there's a lot of accusations, none of which can be really proven because there's a lack of a paper trail for obvious reasons. But all sorts of shadowy goings on. The key player in this is Henry Norris, who was a wheeler and dealer, a mover and a shaker, and knew how to play the game behind the game. And he manoeuvred very, very well at Tottenham's expense and for Arsenal's lasting gain.
Yeah, I mean, the detail of it was...
So as I say, the detail of it was that it was a decision to increase the number of first division clubs by 2 to 22. So when competition resumed after the war in 1919, Spurs and Chelsea had finished bottom of the old first division. And the precedent that had been established was that Spurs and Chelsea wouldn't be relegated. Derby and Preston, who were the top two in the second division, would be promoted. Henry Norris argued that as Arsenal had been members of the league for longer than Spurs, his club should be awarded Tottenham's place. But based on that logic, Wolves and Birmingham City, who finished in the places above Arsenal in the second division, had a better claim to go into the top division. And then when the meeting happened, there was a last-minute proposal
What happened before is that when the top division had been expanded in the past, all the competing clubs had been put into a ballot, and the four with the most votes were judged to be the winners. Liverpool's chairman, who was a mate of Norris's, suggested that this time it should be different. He said that Chelsea should automatically be re-elected because their league position was a result of Liverpool losing to Manchester United in a game that had been fixed by a betting syndicate. That was a big scandal at the time. And he then suggested that Derby and Preston, the top division two, should be promoted. And the meeting agreed with all that. So then there's then Arsenal, Barnsley, Birmingham, Hull and Wolves, plus Spurs, competing for just one place. Liverpool's chairman made an impassioned speech in favour of Arsenal. And 18 votes to 8, Arsenal were voted into the top flight. So today they remain the only team that are in the top division who've got their knots on playing merit.
Which, of course, is something that we
rarely remind people of.
Well, I mean, you know, Theo, you always get these change, you know, these online petitions and votes and things. Pretty much I get four or five every single day. There's one could argue, especially now with coronavirus and football changing, one could argue now is a great time to restart that debate and get Arsenal voted out, going back all the way to 1919. But yeah, just over 100 years ago. The other thing I looked up, Theo, was incredible, was the rival between the two teams is also one of the reasons why we moved from our original ground at Northumberland Park, because there was a match against Woolwich where 15,000 fans were there and a lot of fans were standing on the refreshment stand and it collapsed, people falling everywhere. And so that's when the club realised this ground ain't big enough for us. We've got to move. It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's in a way you could say that Arsenal moving to North London from that perspective wasn't a bad thing for Tottenham, because the rivalry was just another part of the attraction for both clubs, I imagine. If they're attracting massive clubs, I mean, every big club likes a big derby, and some big clubs don't have them. You know, Leeds or Newcastle, they don't have a big derby.
Chelsea have Fulham.
Yeah, well, Chelsea think Tottenham's their derby, don't they? Which is a whole other. I mean, most Chelsea and West Ham both aspire to having Tottenham as their derby. But so I suppose in that sense, it's not been a bad thing. But on balance, yeah, I'd like them to fuck off back to South London. Yeah.
And Martin. I mean, the other thing as well that people might not know is there was a ground share period during the Second World War when, despite all that had gone on, Tottenham, being magnanimous, sort of said, OK, we'll help you out, because Hyde was being used as a munitions factory, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that's right. And there was, I think that there was a fairly frosty atmosphere between the respective boards for quite a long time after the, you know, the promotion and Spurs, you know, got back up into the top division. But I think that wasn't forgotten. But, you know, bigger events came to have an influence, and I think, you know, both teams have used the other's ground during times of conflict when the grounds have been requisitioned. So I think that there was a you know, it's settled a little bit. I mean, people, there's a little bit of discussion on Twitter earlier today, and you talk to people of a certain generation and they'll say, well, you know, for quite a long time people used to, you know, go and see Spurs one week and then they used to go down and watch the Arsenal the next, and that's when things were very different. And you still talk to, I've still got friends of mine in their kind of 70s and 80s and say, well, actually I kind of used to follow them both, really. Well, you know, which seems, you know, totally unheard of you know, to anybody under about 60, really. But, you know, so it wasn't always like that. Interesting one as well, that the first ever game between the two teams, there's always been a little bit of an edge in the relationship, because we played them when they were from South London and for the first time ever in 1887. Mm-hmm. And Spurs were 2-1 up and Arsenal got the game called off because they said the light was going. And so, you know, so there's always been something a bit edgy there. But, I mean, to give credit to Arsenal, when Arsene Wenger was the manager, he drew on that tradition. When he used to frequently claim that he did not see the incident, you know, of them not actually being able to see things, and use that as an excuse for things that have gone wrong on the pitch as well. So you've got to hand it to them, you know, they're true to their traditions.
Because you go back to even before that 1887, you mentioned Woolwich. They were originally from Plumstead, which at the time wasn't even in London. Technically, they were a club from Kent, which is quite extraordinary. But bringing it forward to probably... we're all roughly the same age. We all probably went to school in the 70s. So certainly in the 70s, we didn't have the rivalry with Chelsea. We didn't have the biggest rivalry. It was absolutely then Tottenham and Arsenal. And I mentioned this fact quite a few years ago on the Spurs show, and I think it holds true. To me, the Arsenal fan at school was the weird loner that no one liked. he was the boy that was always smirking to himself, thought he was better than he was, and no one kind of liked him. And that boy might go on to become an MP, a Conservative MP.
Or even the Speaker of the House.
There you are. There you are. Prime example. Yeah. They did have another sort of otherness to them, I found, Arsenal fans. And to this day, we've all got friends who support Arsenal, but they're not that close. There is an element with your Arsenal friends. You get on well, but they'll never be your best friend because of who they support. Theo, do you have the similar kind of thing in your life?
Yeah, I mean, as you're saying it, I'm thinking, actually, he's right. I never really thought of it before. Yeah, I've got lots of Arsenal supporting friends but they're friends only up to a point, certainly. What I'm interested in, though, is this business. I mean, Bruce Forsyth used to say it, didn't he? The great Sir Bruce. He used to say, yeah, I went to both teams, and what's the big deal? He used to get quite cross when people thought it was. What changed? Was it that the whole of football changed and became more sort of bitter and more about partisanship and rivalry? Or was there something that changed? Because as you say, there was no lack of animosity historically. And yeah, in those post-war years, it wasn't unusual for people to be quite tolerant of it. When and what, it seemed to change. Is it because in the 70s, all the violence started, or the late 60s, early 70s, so everyone became more partisan? What do you think?
I think that's got to be a factor. Sorry, go on, Mark, yeah.
No, go on.
Well, I just mentioned Bruce Forsyth because he went to the same school as me.
Did he really?
Not in the same year. I hate
Mighty yeah. Atom went to the same school as you.
Yeah.
Wow.
If he was at school, I'm guessing in the 1940s or something, by the time I was at that school in late 70s, mid 80s, going into the mid 80s, our school was in Edmonton, and it was a Tottenham school. You could barely find an Arsenal fan. And this isn't a time when Arsenal weren't having success. You know, they'd had success relatively recently in their FA Cup's appearances and when they won it in the late 70s as well. So it's not a case of that happening. But it seemed to be, at that time, much further delineated, if you like, and marked out that you had areas that were Spurs, you had areas that were Tottenham. There was just this weird quirk of, you know, I used to go to North London Derby games when they played at Highbury. I used to get on the train at Oakwood Tube Station, which is my local tube station, and everyone on the platform there seemed to be Spurs. But when the train arrived from Cock Foster's, for some reason, it seemed to be full of Arsenal fans. So I don't know, there were these strange kind of distinctions and differences, but also kind of like similarities going across the kind of sort of like whole North London area. Mm. I think it's significant. We've got to relate it back to what happened when Arsenal moved in, because there was a really interesting article that was in the Daily Mirror, written, I think, in the late 1940s. And it was a recollection of a Spurs fan talking about the glory days of the 1901 side, and, you know, then going into the 1921 team and everything, and talking about North London being a Tottenham area. And this guy, this individual, said that him and his mates would used to walk down from Finsbury Park, from Holloway Road, and that's where a hell of a lot of Tottenham support came from. So that when you had then Arsenal moving into Highbury, that formed that real kind of conflict, if you like, and that distinction.
Martin,
and I
do
guess
you think
that's sort of grown up from then, and it's fed into this rivalry that became more and more intense as time went on.
Martin, do you think there's a kind of middle class, working class divide? Because obviously in the 30s, when there was a lot of Jewish supporters who had factories in the East End, and there was the one tram from there to Tottenham. Tottenham then, probably more than now, had a lot of Jewish supporters, and Arsenal didn't. And obviously then in the 30s, most Jewish people was certainly working class. Do you think there was a sort of working class, middle class divide then, maybe between the two sets of supporters?
I'm not sure that there was at the time. I mean, that's something that you know, arguably has developed a little bit more maybe over the last 20 years. And I think a lot of that is down to perception as well. But I think, again, I mean, it won't be a popular view, but I'm not sure that there was quite a divide with the Jewish population, particularly in Northwest London, because I think that, you know, quite a lot of Northwest London Jewish families were either divided or were Arsenal supporters. And actually, Arsenal were the first club out of the two to acknowledge their Jewish support as well, by publishing a Happy Jewish New Year message in their programme as well. So, you know, there's lots of kind of myths and various things that have grown up about how the club supporters developed. I mean, I think that the point for me, and it might be a generational thing again, is that, and it's partly what Adam was saying, is that we grew up in the same places and we were the same people, and they just made a poor judgment about the team that they supported, really. Without romanticising some of the stuff that went on in the 70s and 80s, I mean, I think the hatred is different now, and a lot of it is kind of really irrational, and I think a lot of it has been commercialised as well, if I'm honest. But at the time, you know, it was really fierce, and there was violence at games on match days, and it was pretty heavy duty. But I can remember going into school on a Monday after a North London derby, and I said, you know, I went to school kind of near, you know, Wood Green, edges of Muswell Hill. And so it's right in the middle, you know, you're either Tottenham or Arsenal at that school. And mates who were, you know, on either side of the divide would be saying, having a laugh about the fact that, you know, they chased each other up a street and even like dished out a few thumps to each other as well, you know, because it was kind of part of the game. So it wasn't kind of lovey-dovey, but it was almost, you know, that people just knew that you know, we're all the same. And I think that the level of hatred has kind of changed now. I mean, I get told off about it sometimes, but I kind of have this trouble because, you know, would I like to see Arsenal relegated? Well, yes, because it would be really funny in lots of ways, although you can't really see it happening. But I'll miss the derby. And, you know, I like that bit of the rivalry, and I like the edge to it. But I don't like the fact that some people really do take it too far. I like the rational side of it as well. I mean, you know, again, we were talking about when we were growing up, weren't we? And I think that was the start of sponsorship as well, wasn't it? So we took, you know, if you're going to go and get a new stereo, so I'm not having JVC, mate.
That's right. That's right.
Not having any of that stuff in the house, you know.
Absolutely.
No Sega, you know, that's all out the window as well.
Yeah. So, Theo, I mean, thinking about bringing it forward a bit, and since football has become more commercialised, and the lots of sort of new football fans, there's the famous Far Show sketch with John Thompson, who's in an Arsenal shirt, sitting at a football match, no idea what's going on, watching the game.
Yeah,
there is certainly, obviously, there's new fans in every club, but particularly out of the two clubs, so much more with Arsenal because they had more success with Tottenham than Tottenham in the 90s and slightly beyond. I've always found with those types of Arsenal fans, more than the old hardcore fans like our own, there's always been this kind of sense of entitlement with Arsenal fans that they expect success because they had success under Wenger. And there's that, and with that becomes a real kind of arrogance about how good they are, which obviously makes the way they've been playing recently even sweeter, because let's face it, they're as bad as we are at the moment. Do you think there's something in that sort of sense of entitlement?
Yeah, I think definitely they had the Johnny Come Latelys turned up at Chelsea and Arsenal after, you know, in the Premier League era, because they were big flash London clubs that won trophies. And so if you, I mean, I know loads of people who absolutely didn't like football at all in the 80s, and then now talk to me as if they've been lifelong Chelsea or Arsenal fans, which is hilarious. Yeah. The reason why they were, I think, the psychology of the rivalry is if the other team is doing much better than you, you despise them so much more. So I absolutely despised Arsenal throughout the 90s and the noughties. But now you say they're as bad as us now. We've only just gone backwards to get as bad as them. I mean, the last 4 or 5 years, we've been way ahead of them, really, haven't we? We've been, we've been finishing above them and playing better football and being in contention, and they've been a disaster. So that entitlement that they did have, I think, has been slightly beaten out of them now. Maybe not so much the newer ones. Well, actually, I think all of them, I think they now have that same sort of cynical kind of gallows humour that we used to have about football. Yeah. And now suddenly the whole of North London's got it this week.
Martin, do you think there's a similarity? Because obviously when, especially that type of fan, when Arsenal moved to their new stadium, they thought, this is it, we're going to be as big as Barcelona. Yes, they've won some FA Cups, don't get me wrong, and Wenger kept getting to Europe. But that success that they expected after that move hasn't materialised. Is there echoes of maybe us at the new stadium as well?
Yeah, I think there are comparisons to be made there, although I think there's a lot of false comparisons because the two stadium projects are very different and they were built at different times. But I think possibly the thing to look at with Arsenal, and I mean, you know, you talked to my friend Alex Finn about this, who knows both clubs very well at senior levels and has written a lot about the business side of it. But I think Arsenal thought it was enough to be where they were. I think they stood still and I think they said, you know, yeah, top four regularly, that's fine. It's okay. There's a whole question about, you know, whether should they have promoted Wenger upstairs a little bit sooner. But I think they kind of settled for what they had. And I think that what's happened to them has proved that if you stand still, you end up going backwards. Now, you know, there's discussions going on, aren't there, about, you know, what's happening at our club at the moment. So, but what Arsenal do prove is that there's a view, isn't there, that you keep steadily going forward and you keep constantly improving. And I think Arsenal proved that even if you get to the very top, and, you know, unfortunately, we have to admit they were playing great football at one stage and winning trophies and they were very successful. It doesn't mean you're always going to be that. And they have gone backwards as well. And I think you're right in what you said there as well, that some of the newer supporters, and, you know, I kind of wince a little bit because you sound like the old git, don't you, saying it's all the younger people that don't understand. But amongst a lot of the younger Arsenal fans, there is this absolute sense of rage, and I use that word advisedly, that they're not winning things anymore, that they're not as good as they were when they first knew them. And I think, again, against, you know, as Theo said, some of the people of our generation, the Arsenal fans, have got that similar kind of gallows humour. And, you know, it's something that somebody said once, didn't they, that, you know, football is the most important of the unimportant things, but it's something we all take a bit too seriously. But sometimes you just got to, for your own sanity, step back and have a bit of a laugh. And that gallows humour is important. And I think that's fueled a lot of the relationship between the two clubs as well. That they, you know, the banter, which is a horrible word, I know, that we have with Arsenal fans, and where we, you know, I mean, because what I kind of quite like about it is if you do sit down and you're chatting with a group of Arsenal fans who are reasonable and you're able to have that conversation with them, what always happens is that neither side gives any quarter. You know, whatever bit of the conversation you're having, whatever you're doing, even if it's something like, you know, how you're positioning a beer mat or who's going to go to the bar or whatever, you've got to get one over on them, haven't you? And I think that's quite, and they're exactly the same. And I just, that's fun in lots of respects as well.
Yeah, Adam, go back to kind of what Arsenal fans are like. There was a moment, I think, talk about, I'm starting to go back to class and whatever, but when Nick Hornby's book Fever Pitch came out, which is all about when they won the league for the first time, 89, for a long, long time, that brought a lot of lovers supporting Arsenal. I think that had a lot to do with the kind of fans they started attracting more than maybe we had at the time.
Yeah, I'll echo what Theo was saying. I mean, I've got plenty of friends, and they are friends who a generation ago, 20 years ago, they didn't have any interest in football at all, and now all of a sudden they're committed gooners, and they call the team the Arsenal, which are always sure signs of like someone's been reading up on how to behave like a proper fan. I think what happened with that change in the perception of kind of what our supporter bases are like, and as Spurs fans, we were perhaps a little bit guilty of it during the success that Arsenal had under Wenger, is that we were clinging on to other things. So we were clinging on to that idea that our fan base is more authentic, more genuine, even though a lot of those things are true, it was kind of like a compensation for what Arsenal were getting up to on the pitch. And that any day of the week, like, we'd swap like we had in that respect for what they were doing. But I think you can see it's pretty kind of marked now in how the fans of whatever stripe, whether they're long-standing or more recent, in how they now perceive their clubs. Important not to read too much into social media interactions, but I did see a thread that was gaining a lot of traction the other day where an Arsenal fan was complaining about the number of clean sheets that Arsenal were keeping and the focus on defence. And actually the comment was, this is betraying Arsenal's rich history of passing football. And I think that kind of left out is that, you really do not know the history of your club, do you? So,
But it's interesting, you mentioned social media, but social media now is part and parcel of how football is reported, and therefore which kind of profile a club gets, and therefore more sponsorship and money comes in. And let's be honest here, thank God Almighty, as I speak today, it hasn't happened. Arsenal have a thing now, and it's extremely popular. It's watched mainly by Spurs fans, called AFTV, which I don't know if you've watched them recently during the lockdown. They've been sitting in a room watching the game, and it has been like a cut scene from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It is quite extraordinary. It's literally like some of these people, sad to say, do have mental issues. And it's something that Tottenham, don't forget, we've got some wrong ones in social media. I'm not saying we're as white as thou. But there is an element about the new fans and just the way their fans report on things. And I'm sure there's Arsenal fans embarrassed by that kind of phenomena. But it is still quite a big aspect of the way football is consumed now. Theo, what do you think about that?
Well, I know him, Robbie Lyle. He's actually a really good bloke, and they have there seems to be an appetite for it. He's done it so exceptionally well. 50% of the reason for that is that there's loads of Arsenal fans who are addicted to it, and the other 50% is people like us who watch it for comedy. And I shouldn't think he's complaining either way. But he is a 100% authentic, knowledgeable Arsenal supporter. That's for sure. So I hesitate to join in when he gets a kick in, to be honest. But they're a bit of a joke in that way because of what we said before, but probably because of their massive success, which of course we would have taken any day of the week. They've attracted all these kind of new fans and sort of more plasticky fans and sometimes very fun. I went to that away game once at the Emirates, and they do some. Have you ever seen them doing that thing where they all get on the floor and start doing a kind of oops upside your head type dance outside en masse? It's like, really, it's deeply embarrassing.
I remember going there, and I don't know if they still do it. I don't know if they still do it, but they wouldn't. I mean, apart from Dele Alli, who's Dele, but you know, all our players are given by the announcer the first name and surname. They would go through a stage when it was like Thierry, Theo. And it was just given their first names. And it was like being at some small children's party.
Yeah.
And the jelly is
hugely embarrassing.
Utterly embarrassing. Embarrassing. Yeah. Look, we're running out of time. Let's go to a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll focus more on the actual game on the pitch on Sunday. Back in 1 second.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
And we're back after the break. Just to remind people, we've got, and they're absolutely flying out. We mentioned on last week's show, we finally got our Spurs show face masks. They're limited edition. I can tell you now, over half of them have already gone. So if you were thinking of getting a Spurs face covering, they're a beautiful thing. Help support the podcast as well. Go to shop.spursshow.net. And yes, we do ship anywhere around the world. For those of you with Spurs show season tickets, to remind you, we are doing an end of season show on July the 29th, I think it is. It's a Wednesday special guest, Steve Sedgley. We can only invite season ticket holders because of we're only allowed limited numbers. But if you want to become a season ticket holder, there's still time. Go to season.spursshow.net. But looking forward to the game on Sunday. As I mentioned in the earlier show, we've got a decent home record against them. Haven't lost since 2014. But it's the first time in many, many years that effectively both teams are mid-table, both teams are really struggling, both teams have got new managers this season, trying to find a new identity. Both teams make awful errors at the back. Martin, there's a lot of similarities about how both teams are set up and are playing at the moment.
There are, and I was going to ask if you're doing any of those masks that actually cover the eyes as well. Mm-hmm. I was going to order a box load of them for the weekend as well. I think both teams are trying to find a little bit of a way, and I think the worry is that maybe Arteta has started sorting that hilarious defence out, and there's a bit of structure there as well, and we're still a little bit further back in the journey. So, but I mean, it's a very different. You know, apart from the obvious, in terms of, you know, it's the first derby at the new stadium, but it's not really at the new stadium because nobody's going to be in there, you know, in the stands, which is going to be weird in itself. But it's very different to what it's been for the last few years. And I mean, I think, you know, the derbies are really, really games of football, but you kind of have fears having watched both sides that you know, I mean, possibly nothing could be worse in the terms of standards of entertainment than that game that we played against Everton the other night. But, you know, I may stand corrected on that, but it's difficult to know what to expect, really, isn't it? But I think that's it. You know, what's the identity of the teams going into the game? I've got no. Usually, you have a little bit of a gut feeling, don't you? You know, I think, you know, we could do it this year, or, you know, I'm a bit worried about this year. But which is not great for this, I know. But I'm just like, I really don't know what's going to happen. Which is, you know, which is good, because otherwise, if you did, you wouldn't need to watch the game, would you? So.
But Adam, this since the restart, we as a team haven't really clicked. We haven't looked particularly good. You know, okay, Kane scored a couple of goals and all that, but Son hasn't been playing well. Going forward, we haven't been fluid. It's been very get the ball control, one touch, pass it on. The fluidity that maybe was there early on under Jose. Hasn't arrived yet, so maybe let's hope this is the first game where things do start clicking again.
Well, you'd have to hope, yeah, that we find some kind of cohesion and identity to what we're about, because at the moment, I'll be honest, I'm really not sure what to make of this. I mean, the whole Project Restart thing has been a bit of a grind, in all honesty. It's like, you know, the season's going to be completed, and I've been watching the games because they're on, but really the value of entertainment value of them has been very, very much in short supply. Obviously, for this kind of game, we expect everyone's going to be a bit more animated, and I hope the players are too, because watching a lot of games, not just with Spurs, it just seems like a few teams are going through the motions a bit. It really is difficult to call, because it's in such exceptional circumstances. You think ordinarily, you know, regardless of what the form of either team is, that was always the cliche of, like, doesn't matter how teams are playing, when it comes to North London derby, they're going to raise their game and it's going to be really competitive. Well, we're talking about different contexts and situations now, because there's no crowd. There really isn't that much at stake either. So it's we're just going to have to wait and see and see how things pan out on the day.
Yeah, Theo, obviously Eric Dyer's been banned for 4 games, so Dyer won't be there. One could argue with Aubameyang and Lacazette and the pace, and they get down the flanks and get the ball in quickly. One could argue, although he's made some errors, Sanchez is probably quicker than Dyer. You imagine, unless there's injuries, we don't know about the Bournemouth game, we imagine it will be Sanchez and Alderweireld at the back. I'm imagining that we'd kind of rest players against Bournemouth, knowing that this massive game is coming up on Sunday. How do you think, if you were the manager, what do you think is the best way to line up against this current Arsenal team?
Well, I think Dyer, funnily enough, I know he divides opinion as a player, but I think he's a big miss, because he's the nearest thing we've got to someone who's going to clench his fist and shout and really dig in. You know, everyone goes back to that Chelsea game, you know, a few years ago where he did it, and he understands a derby in a big way. So I think he's a big miss. I'm like Adam and like everyone else, I'm slightly bewildered and not particularly optimistic about what Mourinho is attempting to achieve, what kind of a system. I mean, that game against Everton was so awful. I mean, the way we were just knocking it around in a ponderous manner and going backwards most of the time. Yeah. I couldn't even tell you what he's attempting to do, really, unless he's trying to turn us into George Graham's Arsenal, which is, I mean, and I don't know how he'll set about this game. We just got to pick the strongest team. You got to pick your strongest attackers and hope to God that they don't get us at the back. There might be a case for paying Vertonghen and Alderweireld and maybe Sanchez.
Yes, yes.
It could be a case for that, because, you know, as we know, all the Aurier is a complete liability, and you know, it might be better to play all three of those in there, because as you say, they've got big attackers, not just those two, not just Lacazette and Aubameyang. He rarely starts them both, actually, but he's got that. Pepe's coming into some form, and he's got the young. They've got a lot of threat going forward. But as we know, they're also incredibly vulnerable. Maybe it'll be a case of who scores first, and then then the whole house of cards could come tumbling down.
Yeah, I mean, I think Martin, you know, it's extremely unlikely that either team will get in the Champions League places. So this kind of really is this kind of battle for the Europa League. And you know, my concern is if you do watch Arsenal since the restart, their fullbacks do overlap well. They cross in. There's been so many of those sort of Aubameyang running on and scoring from 6 yards out. You kind of think maybe Theo's right, having the very solid three centre backs, not letting anyone get past a physical game. What do you think we'll do up front? Because there's one little side note. Harry Kane, if Kane scores, will become the all-time top scorer in the league for Tottenham or Arsenal. Harry's currently on 10 goals, along with Emmanuel Adebayor, who obviously played for both teams, and Bobby Smith, who also scored 10. So, I mean, you know, you hope that we see a big game from Harry Kane as well, who hasn't been great since we've come back.
No, I think Kane's another player who gets it as well. It's good in there. Mm. But I think that our attacking players, and you know, going forward, I think we're very good. And what I would normally say is that, you know, if we get at Arsenal, I don't think that at the moment where they are, they can cope with a good kind of front four or five really getting it and really testing them out. The problem that I've got with the way Spurs are playing at the moment is that we're not getting the ball from the back to the front of the team. So people are talking about Kane being in poor form or some not being that well. We're not getting the ball to them. Getting it to them nearly enough. And to me, the key to getting the ball to them in the team at the moment is Lo Celso. And he seems to be being played deeper than Sissoko. And I don't understand why that is. You play him a little bit further forward. But I think the thing with Kane's interesting as well, because there is... It's funny that the reaction to him a lot of the time. I think a lot of our own fans, and don't get me wrong, I think that he's absolutely revered and worshipped by the vast majority of our support. But I think that even the people that are real Kane fans don't see everything that he offers. I mean, there was one great little pass that he did in one of the few kind of minutes that where football broke out on the pitch the other night in the Everton game. And I think his build-up play and his hold-up play is really good. I think, you know, he's a fantastic goal scorer as well. I don't think people realise what we've got. And so... You look at the popular perception at the moment, and not just from Spurs fans, but from some of the commentators as well, is that Harry Kane's not been in good form for a while, for the last year. And he might not have been in as good form as he's capable of being, but I tell you what, a lot of players would like to be in that kind of bad form because he still offers stuff. Yeah. He's still doing the business. He's still scoring goals. He's still working. He's setting things up. He's helping to create a team. And one of the biggest frustrations for me at the moment is that he looks isolated. Out on that pitch as well. We're not using him in the way that we should be using him. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think Son is another one who has not been impacting in a game for the same reason. When he gets the ball, he's double marked. I hope, Adam, that Jose Mourinho, whatever you think about him and his style, is a master tactician. When it comes to big games, he's a winner. He finds a way of winning. And I've got a feeling, Adam, he's going to do something on Sunday which is going to surprise us and try and get one over on Arteta.
Well, that would be really great if that's the case. he's hoping he's got something up his sleeve that's going to surprise us and surprise them. I just think more generally, especially in these games, you've really got to be on the front foot. You've got to take it to them. You know, I don't like the way we played in certain games, both pre and after lockdown, where it's been get behind that ball, that kind of low-lying defensive line. You just want to see in this one, at the very least, in North London Derby, whatever the context are, let's have a go, let's have a crack, because that's when this team is at its best, and that's the best chance we're going to have, I think, of getting a good result out of this game.
Absolutely. Well, let's, Adam, what's your... let's do a quick prediction, everyone. Adam, what's your prediction as the score?
For a 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw. Martin, what's your prediction?
We're going to rekindle the glory days and beat them 5-0.
Beautiful. Theo, what do you reckon?
Well, I had 2-2, but in the interest of being different, I'm going to say 3-2 to us.
Oh, lovely. I'm going to be sadly pessimistic. I've got a feeling it will be a bore 1-1 draw. That's what I reckon it will be. Martin and Adam, have you got, obviously, during lockdown and all that, and I know, Adam, you know, the last time we chatted book-wise was the wonderful book you helped Steve Perriman with. Have you both got projects coming up that we could both all look out for?
Mark, go ahead. Yeah.
possible couple of things in the pipeline, and there might be an update to the One Step from Glory book that I did with Alex. But yeah, kind of looking at a few things. But to take the opportunity to plug it, if people haven't read the Perriman book, it is such a good read, and I'm not just saying that because Adam's a mate, and also says Steve, luckily, but it is just, it really gets it. And if you're a Spurs fan and you haven't read that, you're missing out.
Absolutely. Adam, do you want to plug one of Martin's books?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, by all means. I mean, Martin mentioned Alex Finn earlier on and the collaboration they did on the story of Tottenham's journey, right? And it is a journey. It was a journey, like to the Champions League final. One Step from Glory is a great read. It explains a hell of a lot about the context of Spurs, of where we come from, how we've got here, and kind of gives an indication really about maybe where we go from here as well. So not just because they're both mates, but like it's a really good informed read. So recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's turned into a loving,
hasn't it? It's Oscar speaks to it. Yeah.
Exactly. And while everyone is plugging each other's work, let me plug Theo Delaney's wonderful other podcast, Life Goals. It's a thing of beauty. There's lots of Spurs celebrities talking about their greatest Tottenham moments, peppered with a soundtrack from that era. So go and check out Life Goals if you haven't. Look, guys, thank you so much for doing this sort of impromptu show today. We've got the Bournemouth game in a few hours' time. Let's hope next week we're discussing maximum points on the next two games. Theo, thanks. Adam,
cheers.
Martin, thank you so much, guys.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks,
cheers,
lads.
Bye.
See you.
Thanks to everyone at home. Come on, you Spurs.
Wasn't that a great podcast? Now, if you've got 90 seconds spare in your day, come and listen to ours. It's called What Has He Said Now? And is available wherever you got this podcast.
You're going to lose a number of people to the flu.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at spurshow.net.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.